The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Positively Pro-Life aims to bring you inspirational stories, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm Bonnie Finnerty, Education Director at the Federation, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director. Hi, Maria.
Hello, Bonnie. It's so good to be with you.
So good to be with you. Are you ready for 2022?
I cannot wait. It's going to be an exceptional year.
It is going to be an exceptional year. Well, Maria, some of the strongest and most convicted pro-life voices are those of women who themselves have been wounded by abortion. Today, we will hear from one such woman, the co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, and also president of Anglicans for Life, Georgette Forney. Georgette has a powerful story that we can't wait to share with our listeners. In addition, we will provide, or Maria will provide, some very good news about pro-life legislation in states across the nation. First, though, we'll kick off our podcast with a truly beautiful story that I recently saw posted on People Magazine's Facebook page. Now, it's pretty countercultural to have a big family these days, but that didn't stop Wade and Michelle Torpy of Sussex County, New Jersey, from having six biological children and then adopting seven more siblings from an orphanage in the Ukraine. The adopted children were part of a family of 10 siblings who had lost their father in 2016 and their mother in 2018. Two siblings aged out of the system and one stayed with relatives. But the other seven children were placed in a Ukrainian orphanage. So how did a couple from New Jersey encounter seven kids from the Ukraine? Well, it was through a program called Open Hearts and Homes for Children that several members of the Torpy's church had participated in. Open Hearts and Homes for Children pairs families and orphans for visits over the Christmas season and over the summer. And the Torpies, inspired by others at their church, decided that they would like to host a child, but not just one, all seven siblings. There was an immediate synergy. Right off the bat, I knew this would be something more than just Christmas, said Wade. The siblings returned the following summer, solidifying the Torpies' decision to adopt. In July 2021, the adoption was finalized, and a family of 13 children and two incredible parents was formed. Wade and Michelle received much help and support from their church community, help that had included gift cards for groceries and monetary donations to pay school tuitions. In the pro-life movement, we often talk about the beauty and promise of being open to life, and that's not just for an unexpected pregnancy and a newborn baby. Being open to life includes being open to children in foster care or from an orphanage, welcoming them into our homes, our families, our world. And what a beautiful example the Torpy set at doing that. Wade says, quote, "If there's one thing we think we can do well, and other people have told us that we do well, that would be being parents. I would like to think that's a gift we have that God gave us. And he's asking us to do it a little longer than we planned," end quote. And what does a multilingual family of 13 look like? Well, Mom Michelle says the house is often a bit chaotic, but full of love and laughter. Quote, "If anyone asks what the primary language in the house is now, I say charades. When all else fails, there's Google Translate on the phone," end quote. Now, not all of us can do what the Torpies have done. In fact, most of us can't. But we can all do something on some level to welcome the stranger, to love the child who's been orphaned or in foster care or just in need, or to support a family who is in need, and to celebrate those extraordinary people like the Torpies who hear and answer the call to love in a big way Let each of us likewise pursue such a mission. Maria?
Thank you so much, Bonnie. Now, the following information comes courtesy of our friends at lifenews.com. 2021 has been an historic year in the effort to restore legal protection to preborn babies in the U.S. According to Newsmax, states passed a whopping 106 pro-life laws in the past year. More protective laws have been passed over the past 12 months than in any year since 1973, when the tragic U.S. Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade was decided. The previous record occurred a decade ago when states enacted nearly 90 pro-life laws. Multiple pro-life laws have been enacted in Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Indiana, Montana, and South Dakota. The laws include bans on discriminatory abortions against babies with disabilities, additional safety requirements for abortion centers, and bans on mail-in abortions. Prudence Robertson, a spokeswoman for the pro-life Susan B. Anthony list, told the Washington Free Beacon, "In states across the country, the American people, speaking through their duly elected legislators, are modernizing the law to respect the humanity of the unborn." National public opinion polls indicate that voters wish for additional legal protections for preborn babies. That is also true in Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, the governor's veto pen has stopped pro-life legislation from being enacted in the Keystone State. But pro-abortion Governor Tom Wolf will see his term end in 2022, creating an opening for a pro-life chief executive. Pennsylvania helps pregnant women every day through our Pregnancy and Parenting Support Program, which is administered by Real Alternatives, Inc. Such programs have proven to be lifesavers for preborn children and their mothers. As Prudence Robertson of the Susan B. Anthony list told the Beacon, the nation is more prepared every day to come alongside families and provide them with the support they need. Bonnie.
Thank you so much, Maria. And it's my pleasure right now to introduce our guest for today. Georgette Forney begins her 24th year as president of Anglicans for Life, the only global Anglican ministry dedicated to ending abortion and euthanasia through ministry, education, pastoral care, and advocacy in partnership with the Anglican Church. She is also the co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, an effort to bring awareness to the physical, spiritual, and emotional harm abortion does to women, and to let those who are hurting from abortion know that help is available. Georgette had an abortion at age 16 and later experienced healing, forgiveness, and reconciliation after going through an abortion aftercare program. She has spoken at many pregnancy resource banquets, pro-life conferences, churches, rallies, and university campuses. She's addressed numerous congressional subcommittees on the impact of abortion on women's health. And she's done countless print, radio, and television interviews for local and national media, and presently serves as the facilitator for the Abortion Recovery Coalition. Georgette lives in Sewickley, Pennsylvania, with her husband of over 39 years, and they have one daughter, Rebecca. It is our pleasure to welcome Georgette Forney to our program today. Thank you for being here, Georgette.
Great to be with you all.
Now, you were very young when you had your abortion. Can you take us back to that time and share what you were feeling before and after?
Yeah, as a 16-year-old, your main concern at that point in life is your friends and, you know, where are you going to apply for college and that sort of thing. And when I found out I was pregnant, I was really very naive, as most 16-year-olds are, about this type of thing. And I remember thinking that nobody would want to marry me if I had a baby. And the words that I would use now are that the baby felt like a threat to my future. I didn't have the wherewithal to say that at the time, but I clearly innately had that sense. And a friend of mine, the only girl that knew that I was pregnant, she said to me, "You can have an abortion. It's no big deal." This was 1976, so abortion had just been legalized. And none of us really knew anybody that had abortions, but it was supposed to solve the problem. And I remember I was in my car and I drove down to the clinic. We lived in a little town called Wixom, Michigan. And so I drove into the city of Detroit and I had to go up a flight of stairs. And as I was driving to the clinic, I kept thinking, this feels wrong. It was like my little moral compass in the back of my brain was trying to tell me this was not right. But here's the but that came after. It feels wrong, but it's legal, so it must be okay. So my moral compass was already in conflict with what the, you know, morality of the time was saying, but I couldn't process any of that. I was just desperate as a teenager. So I went through the procedure. I remember walking back down the stairs from this clinic and being extremely relieved. My problem was over. You know, the pregnancy was no more. But when I got to my sister's house, because my parents didn't know I was pregnant, so I had to do all of this on my own, or I attempted to do it all on my own. I went right to bed because it was late in the afternoon by then. It was getting dark. And I remember curling up in the fetal position and just weeping. And I was weeping because I was relieved, but I was also weeping because what I went through was more than my 16-year-old mind could process. Abortion is a traumatic event. I mean, a girl's legs are put up in a stirrup and put in stirrups. This is not a position she's been in before. I was in before. And so this sense in which the trauma was settling in, now that as an older adult and experiencing more in life, I can kind of identify these things. But at the time I didn't. By Sunday morning, I woke up and I remember my method of coping. As I was getting dressed, I was still crying and I thought, I have to get through this. And I thought, yesterday was just a bad dream. It didn't really happen. The whole thing was a bad dream. And now we know that's called denial. But a 16-year-old, it was a coping mechanism for handling the experience. So that's how I went through it. I shut down emotionally what I had done and what it had done to my baby, my pregnancy. I got home that afternoon like nothing had happened and everything was normal with my mom and dad. And I worked really hard to live that way, moving forward and moving on with my life. I tried very hard to put it all behind me.
Now, how did you go about finding healing and hope following your abortion?
Well, it was 19 years, frankly, until I finally addressed it. And about 6 months prior to me addressing it, I had been sitting, I had become a Christian. I had gotten married. We had had a child and I was with three other women. And I was one of the two older women. We were mentoring younger women. And one of the younger women had just had a baby and she was talking about the fact that she had gone through an abortion recovery program because she was struggling to bond with her newborn baby. And I remember saying to her in my most grown up, wise, you know, words, "Oh, Dana, I had an abortion when I was 16. It's no big deal. Get over it." And I thought I really was saying something profound to her. I noticed that the three women around the table exchanged looks. And I remember thinking, maybe that didn't sound as good out loud as it did internally. But we went forward and everybody went home and no, it wasn't discussed any further. And a couple of months later, I was cleaning out some things in my basement and through this crazy series of events, I could no longer deny my abortion. I had opened my yearbook from my junior year in high school, the year I had my abortion, and it triggered memories. And I realized that I didn't just have an abortion. I aborted a baby, because by then I had had a child, so I understood it all. And I immediately did a quick calculation and realized that that child should be 19 years old. And then I remembered Dana's comment. And so I went upstairs and I called Dana, and I was weeping, and she said, "I'll be right over." And she and her mom, who are both dear friends of ours, they came over and sat with me and wept with me, and got me into the first healing program I did, which was Forgiven and Set Free by Linda Cochran. So that's how I found my healing.
What words of wisdom can you offer to women who have had abortions and who now regret them?
Oh, first and foremost, you're not alone. And we don't need to listen to society tell us that it was empowering and that it was okay and just move on. It was a traumatic event, and it deserves your attention. It deserves to be honored. Your baby deserves to be honored. Your trauma deserves to be cared for. Your grief deserves to be processed. Women don't deserve abortion, but we certainly do deserve help once we've had them, and especially when we regret them. So know that you're not alone is first and foremost, that there's a whole posse of women that are in a sorority that we don't want to be in, but we're in it, and we're here to say you can find healing, you can find forgiveness, you can lose the shame and learn to integrate it into your life.
How did the Silent No More awareness campaign come about?
Silent No More was one of those, you know, interesting projects. I love to talk to people about starting Silent No More from the perspective of the fact that when God plants a seed, an idea in your heart to do something, be ready for a lot of revisions, be ready for it to morph and change along the way. The catalyst for it was standing, I had started, after I took this job, I started going to the March for Life every year, and I would get to the hotel after the march was over, and I'd watch the news looking for all of the marchers that I had just spent, you know, the afternoon with, and they would proceed to talk about the women up at the Supreme Court holding a candlelight vigil, and talking about their, you know, how much abortion was needed for women. And I would think to myself, how did the entire media miss the millions that I had just marched with? And all they see are 30 women at the Supreme Court. So one year it got in my brain to create a sign that I made, that it was a homemade sign that said, "I regret choosing to abort my baby." And I knew I was going to stay up at the Supreme Court after the March for Life, all those folks left. Then the pro-aborts would come in and the people from the National Organization of Women. So I stayed up there and I held my sign because I wanted to know that they did care about me. I wanted to know really where I stood with them as a woman who regretted my abortion. And I was appalled at their attitude towards me, their disrespectfulness. One woman, as she was, you know, they were walking around in the circle chanting and stuff, said, "I'm sorry you feel that way. But the rest of the crew were rude, disrespectful, and really disingenuous to say that they represented me when they were so clearly not pleased with my presence." And as I walked back to the hotel that night, I remember crying and my feet were cold and I kept thinking my tears are going to freeze, but I was so angry at their lack of concern. And the reality hit me that they talk about loving women and caring for women, but what they really showed me was that they were only concerned about protecting the abortion industry. And you know, women, when we get mad, we're going to do something. And what I did is I went to Father Frank Pavone and Janet Morana from Priests for Life, and I shared with them this idea that had popped in my head that we needed to raise awareness about the abortion's impact on women. Just like we had breast cancer awareness and AIDS awareness, where was our awareness about this issue? And so we got together, we started talking about it. We sat with Sarah Foster from Feminists for Life and Michaeline Fredenberg with Abortion Changes You. And we all talked about how we could do this. And that was really over the summer of 2002, we devised the plan and we ended up launching it in November of 2002. So we're coming up on our 20th anniversary soon.
That's an incredible story. Can you share with the listeners some of the goals of Silent No More and the impact it is having on the culture?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite questions to answer because, you know, our Silent No More is all about speaking out, being silent no more about the pain, the stigma that we've carried as women who have had abortions. I mean, I remember sitting in a church service and it was Sanctity of Life Sunday. And I remember thinking, get me out of the service. That's all they're talking about is abortion. I've had an abortion. Like, you know, I'm a bad person. I felt like I had to crawl out of the sanctuary that day. And I remember I went home and I started drinking, trying to numb the pain. So I know that women carry this experience deep in their heart. So our goal when we share our testimony, we talk first why we had our abortion, we share what the procedure was like, how we felt immediately afterwards, what were the long-term impacts to our life, and then we talk about how we found healing. So we want to educate first and foremost about the fact that you don't have to carry this pain and this guilt and this shame around like a sack of rocks on your back. There is freedom. We also, in that education, we want to heal people. And then our other goal and the key goal and another key goal to me is we want people to understand the impact abortion has on women, men, and society. So they stop thinking it's no big deal. We want people to stop telling their friends, just have an abortion. It's no big deal. It is a big deal. It permanently kills our child and it impacts our lives. We never walk away from it. It's not something you let go of. So those are the goals of the campaign. And I'm happy to say we have over 20,000 folks that are part of this campaign now. And we have over 3,000 testimonies that have been posted online. So people can go and read our stories. A lot of them are on video and can hear them as well, see them.
Yes, Georgette, can you speak specifically about men who've lost a child to abortion? They're often an overlooked group, but they are part of the Silent No More campaign as well.
Yes, so, and they're an important part of the campaign because we realize that, you know, somewhere along the line, our culture has kind of pitted men against women and women against men. And I believe it's rooted in this particular issue. I believe that it takes two to tango, it takes two to make a baby, and it should take two to address the needs of that child and that family, and whether they stay together as a couple or not. We need to recognize that we are not, you know, while this is sold as a woman's right, what we're really doing is we're undermining our culture and our families, because when men can't protect their children and those children are aborted, the man feels like he has failed at the most elementary level of who he is as a man. Men are designed to protect and provide. Women are designed to nurture and uphold and support, and abortion aborts those natural tendencies. And what we end up with are men that are been hurt. They no longer trust a woman. And on the other side of it, women stop trusting men. I remember when I was standing in front of my baby's father and we were discussing the pregnancy, I remember thinking in the back of my mind, please tell me that you want this baby. And all he could say was, I'll do whatever you want. He didn't even feel like he had the right to speak his own mind. So 20 years later, when we actually ran into each other and were able to have a conversation about this, we both realized that neither one of us were 100% in the position of being excited about the abortion, but we didn't know how to say that. So addressing men helps them find their voice as well, because the reality is we don't want our future generations to continue to go down the same road we did. It was a dead end road. You know, when you go to see a bad movie, when you go to see a movie and you see it that it's bad, you tell people so they don't go to see the movie. We're trying to tell people abortion is bad because we've used the product.
We've got just about a minute left. Can you tell our listeners about the annual tradition of being in front of the Supreme Court during the March for Life, and what is that all about?
Yeah, we have women and men that come to Washington, D.C., and we hold what we call our national events. We do one also in San Francisco. But what we found is when you stand in front of the Supreme Court as a man or a woman who has lost a child to abortion or a family member even, what happens is there's actually a healing interaction that takes place in the spiritual realm. It's like you're taking back something that court took from you. And you're proclaiming the truth that abortion destroyed your baby and destroyed a part of your soul. And so, sorry, I get real emotional this time of year because you're reading all these testimonies and preparing the women and the men. And in 3 minutes, they share their stories. And it's such a privilege because I stand there with them and I can feel the spiritual exchange that happens in their being. It's like they get to speak truth where they've hid the truth, where they've lied, where they've been lied to. So,
and we're gonna have to leave it there, Georgette. Thank you so very much. Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Remember, there's always a reason to choose life.